Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of October 17th. This week we feature an interview with Dr. Christine Feuer-Hinze, who is the director of the Francis and Ann Curran Center for American Catholic Studies at Fordham University. Dr. Hinze is one of the organizers of a recent conference called Learning to Listen, Voices of Sexual Diversity and the Catholic Church. Carrie Weber spoke with Dr. Hinze at Fordham University's Lincoln Center campus.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how Fordham got involved in this conference series.
There were four different institutions that had representative faculty members who came together and found a common interest, actually, in these topics surrounding the Catholic Church and sexual diversity or sexuality. And there was a meeting up at Fairfield, I believe it was almost 2 years ago, at which they hatched the idea of having four conferences that would be specific to each institution, but that they could perhaps pool their energies and go for larger monies and so forth. So that really was the genesis, I'd say, about a year and a half or 2 years ago.
How do you think a conference like this fits in with the Catholic, Jesuit, academic institution? You know, there's several identities that go along with that. It seems like it's sort of intertwined with all three.
You're absolutely right, and it's something we thought carefully about because, as you know, these topics tend to be controversial and tend to evoke strong feelings. And so our planning committee felt that this was very appropriate for Fordham's Catholic-Jesuit identity. And first, as a university, of course, we should always be seeking the truth and seeking all the data we can in every situation. And to listen is one way of getting the data in a particular time and place. And so that's very appropriate. Whether that's in science or in the humanities or theology, that's something all the disciplines have to do. Secondly, as a Catholic university, it seems that very clear that Pope Benedict XVI has a huge emphasis on seeking and finding and hewing to what's true and also doing that in love. You know, his recent social encyclical was called Caritas in Veritate, to do love in truth. And in reaching out to a group of people that is often does feel marginalized in the institutional church and trying to find out what they experience their truth in their lives is, without prejudging one way or the other whether that's going to cohere with or clash with or be complementary to what might be official teaching or moral theology and so forth, but to sort of start on the ground, there's a pastoral dimension to that, kind of just reaching out in love and welcoming, and we did get a lot of comments about that at the conference of appreciation. But also, again, the obligation we have as Catholics and Christians to seek value and seek truth in the most full orbed way possible. We were attempting to serve that. And then lastly, the Jesuit mission, which we did reading on, our faculty group, to reinforce our own thinking on this. But the most recent documents that have been affirmed by the Pope focus on this traditional mission of the Jesuits to work at the heart of the church, but on the frontiers of the pressing issues of the day. And it's even acknowledged that those are often messy frontiers. But I love that, and I think our planning group was very much inspired by that. And the speakers that came and spent time with us, one of the things that struck me above all else was how much those people with varied experiences, some negative, some positive, with Catholicism, all evinced quite a deep love for the church, even sometimes in their discomfiture with the church. They really cared about the church, and also recognizing that they themselves, because of their experiences of sexuality not being of what some would call the norm, find themselves on the margins of the frontiers. And so that Jesuit mission of being at the heart of the church and being on the frontiers actually, I thought, was reflected in the lives of some of these people who would never call themselves Jesuits, but they were just average people who were dealing with faith and sexuality.
Now, you partnered with Fairfield, Yale Divinity School, and Union Theological Seminary. Now, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about why you chose to partner with these schools and maybe some of the challenges and the opportunities that it offers, because it seems like it would give some of each.
There was a lot of serendipity in the schools that actually ended up partnering together. Paul Lakeland, who runs the Catholic Studies program up at Fairfield, happened to have contacts and to know people at these three other schools. That's actually how it happened. And when the conversation began about the possibilities, I think everyone, the people from each of the four schools, became intrigued and thought, what would happen at Union would be very different than might happen at Fordham. Now, Fordham and Fairfield are both Jesuit schools, so we have that in common. And then Yale has its own way of approaching things. And so we realized that that would add richness to a series. It would also raise certain challenges, not the least of them being Catholic schools and Catholic schools that aren't Catholic have different senses of responsibility, different audiences, different commitments to the Catholic tradition, and so forth. And so that was when we realized that it would be important to make sure that each conference was sort of created and built and focused in a way that was really appropriate to that particular school. And so that's been a big interest of ours as well.
Now, the theme of your conference was learning to listen. Why did Fordham choose that particular theme?
Well, for a few reasons. I've already alluded a little bit to some of those reasons. First of all, it was the first conference. And so one of the interests that both our faculty members in theology and our faculty members in religion and religious educations have right now is in the area of practical theology, which simply put means thinking about how theology, how religious belief and practice happens on the ground and using that as a source for theology. And so there was an interest among our faculty planning group in saying, how do we start from the ground up and how do we open a series like this in a way that would be appropriate to the complex subject matter it's going to deal with? So it felt very appropriate to us to say, unlike some of the other conferences in the series, we didn't have big headliner names. You know, we weren't advertising a big keynote. We said, let's see how many different people in different corners of the work and life world, people who are friends and family of LGBT people, people who themselves are experiencing themselves as gay Catholics, or in a few cases, people who've left the church who still very much love their Catholicism, who would be willing to talk from their experience in a way that, and we tried to avoid the extremes, you know, in a way that was neither vociferously on either end of the spectrum in terms of, you know, love or hate, but would be willing to speak really honestly about sort of the complexity. And so that was the genesis of it. And it seemed to fit for the first conference, but it fit for our faculty group's interest in theology and religious studies, and also it fit for the Catholic identity that we talked about earlier and the Jesuit identity.
Right. Now, how did you go about finding all of the speakers? There are a large number of speakers and a wide variety of backgrounds.
We wanted to find people who were through the archdiocese and other archdioceses. We looked for people who nationally were involved in, again, more on the ground kind of work. For example, Deb Word, who you have a video cast of. You know, she's from Memphis. She belongs to a group that I didn't even know existed called Fortunate Families, which is parents, Catholic parents of LGBT young people. And she basically sort of grassroots community type of work that they do, both outreach and advocacy. And then we also tapped our various schools and places. You saw some of the speakers had connections to other schools across the country. And then in the New York area, especially, professionals tried to find out from various parish connections who might be people in your parish who have had experiences with this directly or indirectly, who are working in various professions, like we had an MD and we had a communication specialist and so forth. So we looked all over the place.
Now, it's been a couple of days since the conference, and I read a couple different pieces or read tweets or things on Facebook about it. And I know a couple of people voiced a concern that there were not enough speakers who sort of were speaking on the hardline church teachings on this issue. Do you feel that's a justified criticism, or do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because we thought long and hard about the range of people we wanted to try to and be sure to include. And if you were there all day, you'd know that there were at least a couple people, one in particular, Eve Tushnet, who spoke specifically as a lesbian Catholic who is dedicated to following the church teaching about living a celibate life because she's gay. We also had priests and ministers, you know, who certainly minister in a way that represents that teaching of the church. However, our thought was this is only a piece of a much larger conversation, and two things about that. One is the official teaching of the church is and was the context for the entire day conversation. And so in the opening remarks that I was able to give, as well as the handout we provided with specific quotes from church teaching, we wanted to make that clear that we are not talking about these issues in a way that closes our eyes to or denies or pretends doesn't exist, this very important set of church teachings. And so to say that that voice wasn't there, in a certain way, that voice was in the room the whole day because it was the interlocutor to a lot of the discussion. The other side of the coin is we did decide not to, again, in our effort to try to find sort of a group that would speak to the complexity of this, but there were representatives of some organizations that we knew would come with a very clear message, yes or no. Mm-hmm. And we were a little reticent. I mean, a clear message that would be rather vociferous, you know, and we didn't want vociferousness. Is that the right word? Vociferosity. We were trying to lower the temperature and to sort of let people talk about this sort of complicated world where both of these things are important and both of these things are trying to be cherished. And that's a very difficult balance to strike. But we decided to err on the side of making sure that voices that of people who tend to feel marginalized in the institutional church got heard, knowing that this is only a piece of a much larger conversation, and certainly not ignoring or making any effort to step aside from that voice of church teaching. I think it was in the room even when it wasn't being specifically talked about.
Right. Was there any hope that the conference might change the church teaching on this or sort of further that conversation or make it more, well, I guess more of a dialogue as the title of the whole conference series implies?
Yes, I think, what's the yes? Yes, about more of a dialogue. Mm-hmm. I'm a moral theologian, I'm an ethicist. If you look at the history of Catholic moral teaching, there are lots of continuities, and even in the area of sexuality, for sure there are lots of continuities. At the same time, even in that area, there are developments that take place depending on the time and the place. So, for example, it was only in the 1960s that it became officially stated that one of the purposes of sexuality in marriage is to express love. And so one of the main purposes of equal importance to having babies. And so there's pieces in our tradition that sort of move around and reconfigure and so forth. So you may have seen Peter Steinfeld's comment on the Commonweal blog. He asked that same question. Do these people who are putting on this conference want the church teaching to change? And I think the honest answer, if you listen to the speakers, is some of them definitely do. You know, I think our interest as a university and as a Catholic university is more that obedience to the truth and love that says we need to listen. Again, as Benedict said in God is Love, his God is Love encyclical, you know, he says, if however I view the truth at this particular time, I'm paraphrasing the Pope, of course, as clear as I might be about what's true and good, if I do not heed my neighbor, if I do not listen to my neighbor and what they say their needs are, what they say their concerns are, even though I'm being religiously proper, I might not be doing what God asks. Again, that's a paraphrase of, I think it's 18 in that document. But I found it very fascinating that he says that, because certainly he does not want relativism, and no Catholic does, you know. He does not want a flippant attitude toward church teaching, but he does realize that the listening ministry is incumbent on every Christian, and I'd say every intelligent person. So again, something very appropriate for our Catholic university.
Right. As you sort of alluded to, a lot of the speakers mentioned sort of a kind of pain or tensions they felt between their sexuality and their faith. Mm-hmm. Are there ways that Catholics can help to alleviate that pain and those tensions in the absence of changes in the church teaching?
That's a great question, because that gets to the pastoral dimension, I think, of what we were trying to do. Like, at this particular moment in history, how do we reach out better to our brothers and sisters who are dealing with these issues? And again, as you saw, not just specific gay and lesbian people, but the brothers, the sisters, the mothers, the fathers, the friends, the co-workers. That came through very clearly, I thought. And I don't know about you, but I felt like a couple of the things that I learned from listening to these people speak all day was very simple things. There was a pastor of a parish who makes it a habit always to say every week, you know, you are welcome here, if, no matter your age, your race, your background, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation. And this was an older priest who said, I'm amazed at how often people say to me, I can't believe you said sexual orientation, that you're welcome here. And notice that that's not saying anything about changing church teaching, because Catholic church teaching says we accept and love people regardless of their sexual orientation. So just little things that say that seems to me to be one important way to be inclusive. To talk about some parishes, it's, we learned, do have actual outreaches, you know, specific organizations and groups dedicated to bringing together LGBT Catholics and talking about the faith and so forth. That seems to be another way. But I was just struck by this notion of the pastor simply, or even on the bulletin, when you say, here's who we're welcome to add sexual orientation, that's such a simple thing. And it also would educate everybody, because not all Catholics realize that that's Catholic teaching to be welcome to anyone, regardless of sexual orientation.
Yeah, Deb Ward gave a very moving talk about that and about her son's impression of what the church thought of him.
Yes, yes.
Did you get a general impression from the people in that attended the conference of their reactions? Did people say anything to you about what they thought?
We got, our planning group got a lot of comments. There were lots of thanks and lots of voices, even among some of the personnel at Fordham who happened to be there, saying, thank you so much for holding this. To open up a discussion like this is so important. There were people who brought up the issue, as you suggested, that couldn't there have been more, you know, even more of a variety of voices. There wasn't an Orthodox voice. There wasn't an undergraduate voice. There weren't, you know, a majority of voices of taking positions on very strongly one side or the other, you know. Some people said, why couldn't you have been more radical? And other people said, why weren't you more conservative? You know, and in a way, to hear those voices tells our group that we succeeded, because what we're trying to do is negotiate this very tricky in-between place. And both from the people there and as the planning people, we're very grateful at the success that we felt occurred in doing something that's hard to do in our world, which is taking time to really listen carefully and take into account the complexities and the nuances. And as you say, these complexities and nuances touch real people's lives in really, really deep ways. So that, for both the people who spoke to us and have written to us since, as well as the people, we who planned it, that was very heartening to feel that we did something that doesn't happen every day in this conversation. And we just wish everyone could have been there. Many times the people who comment on these events don't attend the event, as I've learned.
Well, I was there and I was glad that I was. And I thought it was a wonderful event. So thank you for having that. And thank you for having the time to talk to me today.
Thank you very, very much.